All right. And again, although I am the chief judge, I'm really going to talk personally here.
Sure.
Although we talked about this actually at our executive committee meeting this morning in my district, and from the comments of the other judges, I think it's fair to say that most other judges feel the same way I do about this. And there's sort of the intellectual position, and then there's sort of the visceral position, the emotional one. So
is that the one that features O.J. Simpson?
Right, exactly, exactly. And maybe the Nicole Smith judge was even worse.
Right.
You know, intellectually, you know, what I think is that we should have a pilot. I mean, I'll come right out and say that now. We have been playing with this issue since 1983. And after my article came out, it was in one of the local papers, and I actually got a letter from a gentleman who'd worked, I believe, at Channel 4, who had been involved in those efforts 25 years ago, and talking a lot about the history. It was quite interesting. So it's been a long time that this state has been talking about this issue and sort of dodging it in some ways, because it was clear, you know, years ago that the pilot that was authorized by the Minnesota Supreme Court, you know, wasn't really working because it required everybody's consent and everybody wasn't willing to consent. So, I mean, I think we should find out what it means to have cameras in the courtroom in Minnesota. So that's my intellectual take on the whole thing. You know, my emotional one is it's uneasiness. It's fear. It's what's going to happen? What is the media going to do? What's it going to do to the courtroom process? Is it really going to advance justice in our courtrooms? And that's the O.J. Simpson piece, you know, the sensationalism, the, you know, exploiting tragedy. So there's...
And how do we get, and I'm not saying that's not a reasonable fear, because it obviously is, but how do you get past that? And how do you get past the visceral and make this decision on the intellectual?
Well, and I think that's why we really have to give it a chance, because in our district, you know, I think we've gone about this pretty methodically. We heard from judges. We actually had judges come from Wisconsin, Iowa, and North Dakota to talk to our bench about their experiences, because all of those judges are in courtrooms where they allow cameras. Or the North Dakota judge was actually the most interesting, because Judge Erickson, who was originally a state court judge and where they had cameras, and then went to the federal bench where they don't, and he was comparing the experience. And all of those three judges said, you know, it wasn't a big deal, that we were worrying about nothing. So, you know, it's going to require some experience with this, I think, for judges and attorneys and the public to be comfortable that this really is a good thing.
You wrote a line that jumped out at me, and I'm going to find it here in a second. Here it is. There's the belief that the media is only going to care about high-profile criminal cases where they'll videotape a 10-second soundbite of the most dramatic moment of a 2-week trial, leaving out most of what's important about the case. And I read that, and as a longtime editor, I thought to myself, that's exactly what they're going to do. If we tried this, if the state tried this, and it was found that was the result, is that a deal breaker? I mean, if they treat a criminal case like that, is that,
you know,
is that
I don't
kill?
Know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it was interesting that you bring that up, because I heard from a public defender up north, northern Minnesota, who actually, you know, works in that sort of Superior Duluth area. So they have the Wisconsin experience right on their TVs from across the river, or the lake, I guess it is. And that's what he said. You know, he said, I'd be fine with this if they would come in and film the whole trial from beginning to end. But that's not what they do. You know, is that really a problem? Again, I think it probably depends on how the media, you know, chooses to use the footage they have, maybe.
When we talk about the visceral, and when you talk to your fellow judges and people in the judicial system, is the focus, you know, when we kind of think, well, what could happen, is it more on how the legal system responds to the presence of the media being there or cameras being there? In other words, people playing to the cameras, or is it about not having the story told the way perhaps it should be told?
You know, I think it's a little bit of all of those things, although what I hear the most really is a concern about the impact it's going to have on participants. Our witnesses, family members, jurors, are they going to be impacted negatively by this sense of public scrutiny? Is a difficult experience going to be made more difficult? And one of the things that was really interesting for me in all of this was to hear from Marna Anderson, who's the director of WATCH, the victim advocacy group, who was saying, you know, for some victims, being able to get out there and have their story told to the public is a very negative thing that would really intimidate them from wanting to come forward at all. But then for others, it's sort of liberating. So she doesn't view cameras as necessarily all bad, that you have to look at it sort of what are the restrictions that you're going to put on it, to the safeguards that you're going to have. So, you know, one of the concerns I heard, which I think is a really legitimate one from the county attorney here in our county, has to do with gang cases, that a lot of our homicides are gang-related, and that there's a tremendous amount of concern in the community about retaliation, and there's a lot of intimidation that goes along with those cases anyway, and having, you know, any kind of public scrutiny is going to make it much harder to prosecute those cases. So, you know, that's an experience they don't have generally in North Dakota, Iowa, or Wisconsin. So, I mean, I think there are some legitimate things we have to talk about.
So where's the smart money on this issue? Do you think that the committee will decide on having a little experiment, or do you think it'll just say, let's just keep it the way it is?
I think the committee, I mean, I don't know, but I would guess that if a couple of judicial districts are interested in having a pilot, that the committee might say, why not? You know, I just made note of this morning when I was talking to our judges about this whole project. Sandy Keith, back in 1989, when the media came in with a second petition asking for the Supreme Court to change the restrictions because the pilot wasn't working. The rules that they had in place at that point required the parties to agree, and they wouldn't ever agree. And at that point, Sandy Keith said, and now this was 1989, that I would have been willing to grant to our district judges alone the authority to allow audio and video coverage of trial court proceedings on a one-year experimental basis. So, I mean, this is how long we've been talking about this. So
sure.
I think that if there are some judicial districts that want a pilot, I think that my guess is the Rules Committee would go along with that. But then, of course, the Supreme Court is the one who ultimately decides.
Right. Now, I know you have other things to do during a trial, but have you ever sat up there and listened to things and watched things and said, man, I'm glad we don't have cameras in the courtroom?
Well, I'll tell you where we really had some experience with that was with this recent Larry Craig case, where we had requests. Now, granted, we weren't letting them come into the courtroom, but just the request for access out at the Southdale Courthouse where it was taking place. We had two people on our staff here working nonstop for a week, plus the judge trying to set up all of the rules and where the cameras could be and the parking lots. And I mean, it was incredibly difficult. So, yeah, there are all those technical and logistical problems, too.
So if somebody were to say, hey, 4th Judicial District, how'd you like to be our test guinea pig for cameras in the courtroom? How would that go over,
well,
do you think?
We have been asked, you know, we have been asked if we would participate in that pilot, and we're talking about it. The executive committee on the bench was generally favorable, but wants to, you know, talk to the judges at a full bench meeting. So that's where we're going to go next with this in February. We'll be letting all the judges, you know, have their say about what they think about it. You know, ultimately, the only kind of pilot we would go along with would be one very similar to what the Supreme Court authorized, you know, 25 years ago. It's got a whole set of restrictions in there that I think protect those areas where there are the greatest concerns.
One of the, you know, it was interesting reading the history of this. I've been out here for 15 years. I moved out here from Massachusetts where I covered courts. And we went through the same process, and we ended up with pretty much the same rule that was in effect with our original experiment, which is you had to get everybody's permission. And we eventually stopped asking, you know, because it was impossible. You know, and so while there was a rule that allowed access to cameras in the courtroom, the net of the actual working effect of it was there really weren't.
Well, that's exactly the same as here.
That's right. Yeah.
And so the, you know, the proposal would be that we would simply eliminate the requirement that the parties consent. In other words, it would be left up to the judge. And that way, you know, depending on the kind of case or you know, all of the other kinds of restrictions in the Minnesota rule, the judge would decide.